have, the kind of strength it takes to stand before a giant with just a sling and a stone. Surrounded by the sound of a thousand warriors shaking in their armor, wishing they'd have had the strength to stand. But the giant's calling out my name and he laughs at me, reminding me of all the times I tried before and failed. The giant keeps on telling me time and time again, boy, you'll never win, you'll never win. But the voice of truth tells me a different story. The voice of truth says do not be afraid. And the voice of truth says this is for my glory. Out of all the voices calling out to me, I will choose to listen and believe the voice of truth.
Good afternoon, and welcome to We the People Radio. We changed our song. We have a special show today, so we did some different music. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor today is Team Power, our local Kubota dealer. Team Power is located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And they can do everything you want with regards to farm equipment or tractors or whatever you have. Go up and see them. Got some great deals going right now. They have service specials going. So give them a call, 226-9226. Or get them on the web.
Don't call that other number. It won't work.
221 numbers doesn't work anymore. 226-9226, or get them on the web at readingtractors.com.
Unless you want to make prank calls, then you dial the 221 number.
Yeah, you could do that.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so there's a lot of information on the web today for you. Website is wethepeopleradio.us. We are discussing a book called Hard Drive, A Family's Fight Against Three Countries, and our guest is Mary Todd. So we'll give you a little snippet on Mary. I think you're going to find this incredibly interesting, and it's also tied, and actually we met Mary through our guest that we had on China. We've done a couple of shows on China and the different things going on there. And our previous guest, June, sent us to Mary. So this is kind of furthering the things that are going on over there on the Asian Peninsula. I think you'll find it fascinating and sad all at the same time. Mary has been married to Rick Todd for 41 years. Together, they're the proud parents of four sons, including Dr. Shane Truman Todd, who was murdered in Singapore in June of 2012. Mary's an international speaker who earned her master's in organizational leadership from Azusa Pacific University, where she served as an assistant campus pastor. She's currently the pastor at Purpose Church in Kalispell, Montana. Since the morning she heard of her son's death, Mary has been a mother on a mission, intent on exposing evil and fighting truth and justice. The Todd's story has been featured in Financial Times, CNN, ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox News, several other local and national newspapers and radio programs, and on an Asia One documentary, and also on 48 Hours. So there's quite a bit of information out there, although somehow, magically, this never crossed our paths until now. The website that they have set up is justiceforshanetodd.com, and it's the number four. So justice, the number four, Shane, S-H-A-N-E, and Todd, T-O-D-D.com. And that is also on our website, along with video. The one thing on the site I do hope you go and view is the video the family put together as a tribute to Shane. It's really super cute. And we've taken, I should just put a little disclaimer in, we've taken some of the music from that. Some of the songs you'll be like, what are they playing that for? Some of them are Shane's favorite songs. We got them from his brothers and from Mary. And other ones we just thought fit. So today will be a slightly different look at politics, I guess. We're going to do an inside story on a family's journey. I don't think you're going to like the journey, but it sure is a cautionary tale.
Yes, definitely. And Mary, I read the book, and I got to tell you, I don't know how anybody could go through what you've gone through in trying to bring this story to the public and get justice, because it really hasn't, you really haven't got it yet. And that's our story. I don't know how we're going to get it all in 2 hours, but
we're going to shut up a lot. So that was the most talking ever from Bill and I.
Yeah, read the book, Hard Drive. I think it really shines some light on what really goes on in China and with the relationship between China and the U.S.
And Singapore just seems so clean and friendly and perfect.
Yeah, just
surprise.
Yeah, no.
So how are you doing this afternoon, Mary?
I am doing well, Aaron and Bill. Thank you for having me on. It's a privilge.
Absolutely. I hope you're feeling chatty.
Of course.
We decided on our way over, we're like, oh boy, we don't even.
What if she's not chatty?
I figured you were chatty. I was just assuming that. But I thought, I don't even have the vaguest idea how we would begin this story, because it is lots of twists and turns. But I'm assuming maybe we start with, tell us about Shane.
Well, Shane is my firstborn son, and he was born in 1980, and I knew he was different from the time he was in my womb, because he kicked so much that he bruised my rib cage.
Oh, wow.
And so the doctor had me sleep with ice packs on my chest.
Yeah.
Just to keep him out of the ribs. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
And, well, yeah.
So that was the early rugby practice, I guess.
That's the early rugby practice, and he was walking at 7 months. He was just one of those kids. The emergency room knew me by name, which was really embarrassing, and he was just always hurting himself because he was just one of these kids. But he was also smart, and we knew that from the beginning as well. And so he very interested in science. I homeschooled him through some of his years just because school couldn't keep up with him. And he's the only one. We don't know where he got his brains. We're not like that. And no offense to the other boys, they're not quite up to that part.
Well, reading that story,
I don't even know what they're talking about. I hope we don't have to say any of these things.
The stuff he was involved in was so far over most people's heads that I'm glad you didn't dwell on it too much in the book, because it's very technical. And he had to be a brainiac to even be involved in that type of work.
Yeah, and Bill, honestly, we didn't even know until he died what he was involved with. And to this day, I can't really explain. You know, I can say what I can read off of a paper of what GAN technology is, but we really had no idea the caliber of Shane or how important what he was doing was until after his death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that technology is very technical, and I think that had a big...
He was literally born at exactly the right time, because if he was 20 years older, he would have had no outlet for some of that skill set of his.
Yeah. So I went on to have three more boys, so I am the mom of four boys. And Shane was their leader. We had a great time, a great childhood, and, you know, just a lot of fun raising boys. And Shane was really invested in making sure that the boys did the right thing. John, our next born, Shane really towed the line. Even though he was a wild kid and a smart kid, he really wanted to please. And then along came John, who said, "Why do you want to please our parents? What's going on?" And so Shane really, with all of them, mentored them and was just a great big brother and an inspiration. And so he's left a huge hole in our family with him not being here. But it is a story that God has given us the grace to live, and I believe that at such a time as this that he has chosen our family, and I have no doubt that God's in charge of this story.
Yeah, and it's very timely, too, because of what's going on in the news and what's going on in the world.
Yeah, you
China.
Guys were a little ahead of what was happening. I would imagine back when you very first started this, there wasn't so much that was known about these different companies, the interactions with the intellectual property theft and the technology theft and all that, and now that's really hit the forefront.
We
need to take a really quick break. This first break always sneaks up on us.
Sure.
So there was one of Shane's favorite songs. Not one we've ever played before, but a fun one nonetheless. You're listening to We the People. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Oh, Susie Q. Oh, Susie Q. Oh, Susie Q, baby, I love you. Susie Q. Like the way you walk, I like the way you talk, I like the way you walk, I like the way you talk, Susie.
So for those of you who might have watched the video we posted on the side of Shane singing karaoke, that was not Shane singing.
That was pathetic.
It was really important that Shane was brilliant because he was not a singer, but he was enthusiastic. He was incredibly enthusiastic. Yeah. I laughed. I thought, oh, we got
Aaron,
it.
Aaron, he said he would give up all of his degrees if he could have been the lead singer in a rock band, and he was dead serious.
Oh, now that audience.
Wow.
So wethepeopleradio.us, do go there and watch the video. He was really funny. You could tell he was just into it. So, and, yeah, you know, some of the pictures, too, you could really see, even though they were even still pictures, you know, that rugby shot where he literally looks like he's standing on the shoulders of his teammates to block a kick. I mean, he wasn't kind of a halfway guy. Nothing.
That's right.
Nothing, just a little bit. I'm sure you had your work cut out for you. God love you. You had three more kids. That's really brave.
Boys.
I know my sister has three boys, so we have some knowledge of how this works. But, four and Shane in the lead.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh my gosh! So he won amazing science fair awards as a little kid.
Yes, people started recognizing Shane in high school. He won second in the state of Florida with a science project that he had, making a battery out of yeast, and it won fourth in the international science fair, so in the world.
Wow!
And he was made a name for himself, and he was second in the state in wrestling. So he was kind of a renaissance man. He did it all. He wasn't just a brainiac. He was an athlete.
Oh, yeah, he was far from nerdy. He was a big guy. You can't really tell how tall he is because I can't tell if the people he's standing next to are short or if he's just really tall.
He was 6'1", so he was 6'1", and his brother John, 6'1", and his other two brothers are a little shorter than that. So, yeah, he's a big but burly boy.
Yeah. So didn't really fit the, you know, scientist mold exactly. So when he was taking off to, you know, go to school, he was looking at colleges and all that kind of stuff. Was this a grueling exercise? Because he probably had a lot of choices.
He did. He wanted to be a Florida Gator, and he applied at several places, was accepted several places, but of course we were living in Florida at the time, and he chose to be a Florida Gator and really loved it. He did his undergrad there and his graduate work, his master's degree in Florida, and then he went on to Santa Barbara to get his PhD in electrical engineering.
So that kind of gives you an idea.
That he,
Yeah, that gives you an idea what he was capable of doing.
Yeah, he looked really young. There's a picture of him when he was receiving his doctorate, and he looks really young.
I think he was probably 25 by the time he finished his doctoral degree. He graduated from college pretty young. Actually, he had to have been older than that. So maybe he was 28. I don't even remember, but he was pretty young. He graduated from college young and got his master's, but it took him, I think, 5 years to get his PhD, so it was quite a process.
Yeah, and some of it you list in the book. I'm like, I don't even know what that is. Isn't that terrible? I bet when you were researching this, and I guess we should point out, you wrote this book with your niece, Christina Villegas.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. So she, whose idea was it to write the book, just out of curiosity?
So, well, let me just say, Christina Villegas is not only my niece, she's Shane's double cousin. So my husband is my husband's sister is married to my brother. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
At first when you read that, it sounds like a Southern tale, but then you realize, no, wait a minute.
No, that's okay. We can
do
that.
And I always tell people it is legal.
Yeah, I didn't want to say legal. Yeah. Just, you can do that.
I had to think about it. I'm like, siblings married other siblings. Okay.
Exactly. So Shane and Christina were best friends and grew up together and were together all the time. And once our government, and I should go back at some point and tell the story of what happened, but once our government shut us down from the highest level, I realized I need to write this book to tell the truth. And in it, you will find that I should be sued 10 times over because I name names.
Yeah, you
do. I tell what happened. I tell the truth. No one has ever sued me because it's true, and I can back it all up.
Right.
So I went to my niece, Christina, who teaches at the university. She teaches writing and political science, and I asked her if she would like to write it with me. And so we did it pretty fast because I already knew the story. I'd lived the story, and I would send chapter at a time to her. I'd write it because it is my story, and then she'd make it shine and fix it and do all kinds of stuff to it. So we worked great as a team, and I'm so appreciative of her partnership and her love for Shane, obviously.
Right.
Well, it's an incredible page turner, and the way that you the way that you guys told the story, you know, obviously there was a massive spoiler alert at the beginning because.
Yeah.
You knew that he had died, but then mm-hmm. how that all happened and the unveiling of all that in the detail, I mean, although we'll talk about it today, I really would encourage people to go read the book. It's a fast read. It's a compelling read.
Well, it also, when you talk about naming names, I mean, we're talking about members of Congress that went on to, work in China. I mean, there were some reasons, I think, that it was never pursued.
You could see all the evil and the ugliness lurking in there. It was just nasty.
It was a bad
people
deal.
Who would talk to you and then later say, oh, I never said that.
And then we'd find out why.
And like all good mysteries, there's still that element of mystery today. But when you, I don't know necessarily that people who don't spend a lot of time outside our country, I don't know if they realize just how different things are. As I had told you, via email, I know some folks, and the guy was in the service and married a woman from Japan and moved here to the States, and the wife one night, just out of the blue, took their daughter and moved back to Japan, and the Japanese government has hidden her from him and the daughter for years. State Department, zero help. He can't even get a welfare check on the kid, much less go to see her.
Well, I've always told people, you know, when you think
that's
our government
a different
is
different deal.
Yeah, when you think our government is bad, go overseas and see the rights and what you know people in other countries have to live with. After reading this book, it really puts in question what our government would be willing to do for you if you got in some kind of trouble overseas. I don't think it's what you think.
You read this book and you realize you're on your own.
You're on your own. You go overseas and you're on your own. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think it depends on what it is. In our case, China has so much money and power over our country
right.
that it was too costly to expose what happened to Shane. He was just a pawn being used, and they were willing to sweep his death under the rug. With all the evidence, everything that we provided, all of that, our government, under the leadership of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama,
and
just shut us down.
And Mueller, and I mean, there's a
I mean,
whole
Mueller's
bunch
in this.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's in this.
Yeah, it's, there's a lot of players, and none of them did anything to help solve
People are like,
this.
Well, for heaven's sake, stop talking about it like we've read the book. You've got to tell us the story. we're wrecking it. Go ahead, Mary.
Do you want me to just hop into the story?
Yeah, we just get all exuberant and everything, and so we'll just stop doing that. We've got a couple minutes till our next break, so you just set the stage.
All right. So Shane, right after his PhD, had several job offers, but the one he took was in Singapore. He wanted an adventure, and he went with a company called IME, and it was under the Singapore government, which is called A-Star. It was under their umbrella, and he wanted to do research, and he wanted to have adventure, and so he moved to Singapore. And things went well for about a year, and then he started working on this technology that we had no idea what it was. After they sent him to the United States, to New Jersey, to get trained, he went back to Singapore, and it was from that point on that Shane started to be fearful. We talked on the phone, as you can see from the video of his life. We were a very close family, so we talked at least once a week on the phone, and Shane started saying, "Mom, I think that they are asking me to compromise you as security. I'm working on this highly, you know, technical," he had to sign an ATAR agreement, meaning that he couldn't transfer this technology to an enemy country, which China would be. But he said that they're having me meet with a Chinese company. I'm just very uncomfortable. So he did say to me, "Mom, if I don't call you every week, call the American Embassy." And I was so naive. I was like, "What are you talking about? You're fine." But as the weeks rolled on, he got more and more agitated and concerned, and he just kept talking about it. We didn't know what Chinese company he was talking about. We didn't know what GAN technology was. We didn't know anything. But we did know that Shane quit his job. He said, "Mom, I'm not going to do what they're asking me to do." He quit his job. He turned in his resignation. He gave him a 60-day notice. He also had applied and gotten a job here in the United States, and he had a ticket to come home. And we were so thrilled because even though I was sure they wouldn't hurt him, even though he said he thinks his life was being threatened, I was sure that he would be fine. And so he was scheduled, his ticket to come home was July 1st, 2012, and it was on June 24th that I was at our lake house with my mother, and I was so excited. The day was just beautiful. It was gorgeous. The lake was sparkling. My three other sons were in town. My husband was flying home. He was a pilot for American Airlines. He was flying home that day. We planned a wonderful day on the lake. And I received a message from Shane's girlfriend in Singapore asking me to call her or to send my information so she could call me. And I knew something was desperately wrong at that point.
Hold that thought, Mary, so we don't mess up the rest of it. We need to take a really, really quick break. I hope that you will go online and check out the rest of the information about this program. And when we're done, we'll post the commercial-free archive, and I really would encourage you to send it to other people. The website is wethepeopleradio.us.
The road is long. Strong, strong in
the same. These mysteries of life, that just ain't my thing. If I told you that I knew about the sun and the moon, that'd be untrue.
And we're back. All right, Mary. Great day. Sun shining. Feels
sunshine,
everything is perfect and the darn phone rings.
Yep. I get this call from Shane's girlfriend, and she is screaming, and I couldn't understand what she's saying, and I was just begging her, slow down, stop. Finally, I made out the words that Shane had hung himself, and I just fell to the floor, and I thought, my firstborn son is dead, and I just called my children. My husband was still in the air. I left a message for him. The boys, my mom and I were at the lake. The boys were at our bed and breakfast. They all came in, and we just started planning to get ourselves to Singapore, and at that point, I had no idea what was going on. I knew Shane wasn't suicidal. I knew, but I just took it at face value, you know, what if somebody tells you that.
Sure.
But it was on our way to the airport, we met my husband Rick in Denver. He was flying in, and my son John and my son Dylan and I met him in Denver. Now, this is where God comes in. My husband flies for American. My son flew for Delta at the time, so we were covered. We had our passes. Chet and his wife, my third-born son, were running the bed and breakfast, so they stayed behind with my mom. They couldn't come with us. And we met Rick at the Denver airport, and I get a phone call from my brother, who's a pastor in Southern California, and he said, Mary, we can't wish that something that isn't so, but I don't believe that Shane committed suicide. You know his life had been threatened. If you get his computer, don't open any files. I have a computer forensic guy in my church, and we could get a lot of information from Shane's computer. And that was a God thing right there. We get to Singapore. We meet with the Singapore police. Tracy Goins from the vice consul with the American Embassy was there with us. Rick, my husband, took her aside and said, hey, we think there could be foul play. Can we trust them? She called the embassy. She was on the phone for 10 minutes. She came back. She said, yes, you can trust the Singapore police. So we gave them the information that Shane had given us, that his life had been threatened, that he was worried about compromising U.S. security, all that stuff. And basically, Detective Call, who was a young 23-year-old with this grin on his face that I'll never forget, we're sitting in this putrid green little, it looked like an interrogation room. And he said, do you want to know how your son killed himself? And he read from a piece of paper, as like from a novel, about Shane putting up bolts and ropes and pulleys and slinging him over his bathroom door and tying a noose around his neck and falling to his death. And I just kept thinking, wow, that would take an engineer to do all that. And then he said, do you want to see the suicide notes? Nobody has read them, but we got them from his computer. They're typewritten. And, of course, we said yes, and he handed each of us, including Tracy Goins, who was there with us, a copy of the suicide notes. And that was the first sense of joy that I'd had since I heard that my son had committed suicide, because I knew that within the first paragraph that my son did not write these notes.
And there were two notes. There were two notes, correct?
Well, he actually addressed five different people, starting with IME, the company that he worked for, thanking IME for giving him every opportunity to succeed. That was the first paragraph of the notes. And the suicide notes are included in the book.
Yeah, when you read those, if English is your first language, when you read these, you're like, sounds like a customer service on my on my cell phone or something.
Yep. And two linguistic experts have also substantiated that mathematically it was impossible that Shane wrote them, that an American did not write those notes. These are separate from, we didn't know these linguistic experts before we submitted these suicide notes.
No, but that information was really interesting because... and that should have been, obviously, that was one of the, it was really near the end of the book, and, or at the end of the book, really, and all we could think of reading it was, where in the heck was the FBI during all this? But we'll get to that.
And mm-hmm. the point you made yeah. with the notes was, if he didn't write those notes,
yeah, who did?
He didn't commit suicide.
Right. And so I handed them back to the officer, and I said, my son may have committed suicide, but he didn't write these notes. And I knew then in my heart that, you know, that was our first bit of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, my John and Dylan and Rick and I went to Shane's apartment, and I made a beeline for that bathroom. And when I got there, there were no bolts, there were no ropes, there were no pulleys, the door was open. There was no investigative tapes, no, you know, looking for fingerprints, nothing. It looked like the picture of an apartment of somebody getting ready to leave. His bags were being packed. He had a load of dirty clothes, a load of clean clothes. All of his books were packed. Everything was packed. And when I walked in the bathroom and I didn't see any of the things from the description, I immediately called Detective Call. And I said, where are the bolts? Where are the ropes? Where are the pulleys? There's nothing. And it was a marble wall.
Yeah, no holes in the wall either.
John and I, yeah, no holes. Yeah. So they couldn't have taken them down. And he said, I think that you misunderstood me. And I said, no, I didn't. I heard every single word you said. And he said, no, I think you misunderstood. So I called Tracy Goins, the vice consul. And I said, what did you hear? And she heard every single word about the bolts, the ropes, the pulleys. They came over, and so the detective and another man came, and I said, you tell me how my 6'1" son hung himself from this standard size door. I don't get it.
Yeah, his feet would touch the ground. I mean, that's...
Yeah. Well, the pictures of... And then I said, do you have pictures of him hanging? And they took no pictures of him hanging. When I asked why, they said, well, we were more worried about saving his life.
Right.
And he had been hanging there for 2 days, so there was no saving his life. Mm. I think it's very bizarre that in an investigation they would not take pictures. They had pictures of him lying on the floor, and all the blood pooling of the 2 days of there, you know, his arms were completely purple because of the blood pooling. And so that was our next clue.
Well, the big clue is the fact... I thought right away was, if somebody was going to commit suicide, why would they be packing their bags and separating their laundry and doing all these things?
And marking their furniture for sale.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a red flag.
He wasn't that organized, was he?
No.
I mean, he's still a regular guy. No. He was a rugby player, for Lord's sake. He couldn't have been that tidy.
Yeah. No, he wasn't tidy. But he was, you know, he was getting ready to go. It was his last day of work. He had just gone to a party. And so we kept looking for clues in the house. We were like, if Shane knew, he would have left us a clue of some sort. So we kept looking. And, you know, I looked through all the trash. I looked through everything. And, you know, every single thing in his apartment. And I didn't find any clues that would lead me to what happened. But I did find a little, what I thought was a Mac speaker. And we were just taking little things that we could take home with us. And most of his other stuff we gave away to his friends, his bicycle and his clothes and his books and all that stuff, because we didn't want to fly him all the way back. But little things. So I said to my husband, hey, do you think the boys could use this Mac speaker? And Rick said, throw it in the bag.
Like just a speaker for a computer. Just the little sit on your desktop.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. If you saw a picture of it, you'd see... and there is a picture in the book that you'd see why I would think it was just a little speaker. So we were there. We were in Singapore for a full week, meeting with the FBI, meeting with the ambassador, meeting with everybody, telling everybody we met that something doesn't add up. But we didn't know anything at that point. We just knew that Shane did not write the suicide notes. We knew that the bathroom didn't line up. We knew that nothing made sense. And so when we got home, my husband and I started to investigate the murder of our own son. And while we were writing the State Department, writing the government, my husband, it's been about 2 weeks after the funeral, Rick said, Mary, where is that thing that you thought was a Mac speaker? And I told him, and he went and found it, and he plugged it in, and it was a backup hard drive that had all Shane's files from his computer on it. And Rick said, oh, my gosh, this is so important. My son John flew it down that day to Southern California from Montana. We knew we couldn't send it in the mail. It had to be flown down. He was met by the computer forensic expert, Asraf Massoud.
Because you guys never looked at it because you had already been...
Already been told don't open it.
That was so smart.
Right.
We've got to take a really quick break, but we will be back with this riveting tale. We're chatting with Mary Todd. We are discussing the murder of her son in Singapore that took place in 2012, and the book is called Hard Drive, A Family's Fight Against Three Countries. You can find all the information at wethepeopleradio.us. Hard drive has now made it to Southern California.
And one important detail I left out is when we got to Shane's apartment, the police had taken both of his computers, his cell phone, and his diary, and would not give them to us. And when we asked why, they said, his death is under investigation.
Except for the fact that they already told you that they had made a decision, right?
Right, right. And how he killed himself. And when I asked for a written description of what the detective call gave me of how he hung himself, he said he couldn't give that to me either because it was still under investigation.
The wall starts to go up.
And they've never given you those things.
They've never returned those things to you. We do have Shane's computer back. After the inquiry, we got his computer back, but the hard drive is an exact duplicate of his computer, so it didn't give us any more information. But what happened was we delivered to Asraf Massoud, and within a short amount of time, it was probably a matter of a couple of maybe 6 weeks. He told us it would take some time. My husband and I were at a pastor's retreat in Lake Tahoe, and we get a phone call from him. I'll never forget because we were driving in the mountains when we got this call, and Asraf Massoud said, wow, I just found something really important on Shane's external hard drive. His computer was accessed 3 days after his death. And we knew right then that whoever accessed his computer had to have been complicit in his murder.
Because that was prior to the police having it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And, well, we had the hard drive from his apartment. So it happened while Shane's body had already been taken, and the police had his computer, but the hard drive was still backing up everything. So it was before we got that hard drive. After Shane had died.
Right.
And so what he found out was it was a file that had been created and erased. And it was a technical file involving Huawei and IME, Shane's company. Huawei is the largest telecommunication company in the world, and they're the ones that are on the news all the time. we've never heard of it.
And just for people who aren't familiar with that, because at first I was like, Huawei, I've never heard of that. Mm-hmm. And June explained to me it's H-U-A-W-E-I. So it's the company that starts with H, although it sounds like it starts with W. So anyway.
Right. And it's pronounced Huawei. And so that was all new to us. Well, his computer showed this file that had been created and erased. So my husband, Rick, said to Ashraf Massoud, check everything that has to do with Huawei and IME and what kind of technology they were involved with. Well, it ended up that Shane, his computer showed that he was working on an ongoing project between IME and Huawei to co-develop an advanced amplifier using GaN technology. And on his computer, we saw that there was an export license clearly showing that the technology could not be transferred. So we knew something, but we didn't know anything about Huawei. Now, this is another God thing. On October 7th, 2012, Shane was murdered, the summer of in June of 2012. 60 Minutes had a segment on the Chinese company, Huawei, and it was all about their stealing technology. And that is when we knew for sure. We were like, wow, this is really powerful. So we started begging for help, and no one would listen to us, no one in our government. But there was a man named Ray Bonner who was an investigative reporter, and he was a friend of a friend of ours. And he caught wind of our story and started working with us and working with us and working with us. He dug and dug, and we found out so much through his investigative work, which ended up then becoming the Financial Times story that I sent you guys that was written in January of 2013 that really gets into the technology, what Shane was involved with, what had happened, what we discovered. And so that launched everything. We thought our job was done. We thought our government will take over. They are going to make this right. We went to Washington, D.C. three times. 48 hours was followed us everywhere we went for a whole year. We went to Singapore several times. We just kept hitting roadblocks, and we didn't understand why until we met with Congressman Wolf from Virginia, who had been on the Huawei committee, and he told us, you guys are doing the right thing, but you're not going to get anywhere. And we were so shocked. We were like, why? We have the evidence our son was murdered. We have why the evidence of why he was murdered, what he was working on. And he said, Huawei owns a law firm on every corner in Washington, D.C. They're too powerful and too influential for our government to do anything.
Wow, that had to just hit you right in the gut. And just so people, if you want to go, if you haven't read the book, the technology that he was involved in, or the machine that he was trained in when he came back, was called a MOCVD, which is metal organic chemical vapor deposition machine. Look that up, and that'll kind of tell you what he was involved in. Big stuff. Telecommunications, military. Well, it wasn't supposed to be military, but it was sold to the Chinese kind of clandestine.
Yeah, they were pretending it was for communications, but it had a military application.
That's
and
right.
That was,
and that's what they were squeezing him for.
Yeah.
So. Right. So the frequency was way too high to be it was a military use frequency. And what GaN technology is, it's the most powerful and dynamic advancement in telecommunications and military applications. It's a new semiconductor, and it's 10 times more efficient, say, than silicon. And,
right.
And so it's a very, I mean, it can make airplanes disappear. You know, when the 777 disappeared, GaN technology has that ability. It's a radar jamming system, satellite communications, missile guiding system. It's lighter, it's more powerful, and much faster than any of its predecessors. So it was really powerful, powerful technology. And so when experts, Steve Huettner, a military radar expert who spent 30 years in the defense industry, a giant Raytheon, he reported that the specifications were far too high for just a normal, civilian use.
And yeah, cell phone technology.
He says this just smells like defense work. And then Robert York, the same thing. He was a professor at UCSB, and he was a leader in gallium nitride. He said it was well above a cellular network and more on the lines of the level needed for radar. And so then we come to find out, that the CEO of Huawei was a major in telecommunications research for the People's Liberation Army before he retired and founded Huawei.
Oh, what a shock.
That would be the Chinese government.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So our life changed in an instant from that Financial Times article, and we were traveling. I was speaking all over. We were just trying to drum up support and trying to get people to help, and people did. Senator Daines was great. Congressman Wolf was wonderful to us. And then there was Senator Baucus, who wanted to go to Singapore with us. He helped so much trying to get a FOIA request, Freedom of Information, trying to get a Senate investigation into the death of our son. And then there was one day that I got a phone call from his legislative assistant, Laura Rausch, who said, "Mary, there's nothing more that we can do for you." And I was shocked. I was like, "What are you talking about?" And she said, "No, we've done everything we can. We just can't do anything more." And it was that day, that very day, later in the afternoon, that it was announced on the radio that Max Baucus became the ambassador to China.
Yeah, how about that?
Mic drop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Yeah. Was he really helping was he doing what he said he was doing in the beginning, or...
Yeah,
it's all lip service.
I think
once you read it, you really figure it out. Mary, we're gonna we've got to take a hard news break here, but we're gonna come back in. Mary is our hostage for the second hour because obviously this story just goes around and around. It's very complicated but simple at the root of it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You're listening to We the People. Join us online, WeThePeopleRadio.us. Welcome back. You're joining the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Team Power, our local Kubota dealer. And Team Power is running some service specials right now. If you want to get up there and get your tractor or farm equipment serviced, go up and talk to them. Give them a call.
Or your mower.
Well, yeah, or your mower, yeah.
Once all this rain hits your grass.
Yeah, it'll be growing about
be ready.
3 inches a day. So, give them a call at 226-9226. They're at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, or you can get them on the web at readingtractors.com.
Ta-da! You can find everything about the show at wethepeopleradio.us. Information about sponsorship, previous shows, all of our archives are free of charge. Our friend Robert Exter takes all the capitalism out. So although we are big supporters of capitalism, the commercials sometimes make the shows longer. So we do take those out for the archive. And so if you have friends who say that they don't like to listen to radio because they don't like all the commercials, well, there's no excuse now.
That's right.
You just send them that MP3 file. It's free. They can put it on their little phone or listen to it in their car or whether treadmilling or whatever it is people do these days.
That's right.
So anyway, our guest today is Mary Todd. She and her niece have written a book called Hard Drive. It's a family's fight against three countries. It is the story of her son, Shane Todd, Dr. Shane Todd, actually, who was murdered in Singapore in June of 2012. And there is a little blurb on the back of the book that I really like. The authors, Mary Todd and Shane's cousin, Christina Villegas, hope this book will honor Shane's memory, enthrall and inspire the readers, highlight the universal struggle for truth and justice against the deceit of those who insidiously seek to gain and maintain power, and raise attention to a growing potential threat to U.S. national security interest, the use and misuse of advanced technologies and weapons systems. And that is really the fact that a brilliant young man was taken in the prime of his life, the deceit of all of the governments involved, Singapore, China, a Chinese company, Huawei, spelled Huawei, lest they be confused or muddled. And they're in the news quite a bit.
And the United States.
And the United States was, to put it mildly, worthless
or
to help this family. So that's the end of our input. Back to Mary.
Thanks. So everything that we did, we geared towards the inquiry that was going to be in May of 2013. The inquiry we were told into our son's death in Singapore, they said it would be just a fact-finding mission. And this is going to make us really sound stupid. We halfway believed them and hoped that it was true, that if we could just get all the evidence to court, we would prove. At that point, our son's body had come back to the United States riddled with defensive wounds, bruises all over his hands, two bumps on his forehead. We have pictures with him with a bloody lip, a bloody nose. And so right there, two doctors in the United States said, when they saw his body physically, said he fought for his life.
And the butts on it are the bumps on his head. You said were headbutts, where he had headbutted somebody.
Yeah, that's his signature move. So he was not only a rugby player; he was an ultimate fighter.
And
he liked to do headbutts. And so I'm sure Dr. Adelstein, who was a pathologist, he was the chief pathologist at Harry Truman Veterans Hospital. He analyzed the pictures of Shane's body, that the literature on his neck and all of that, and came to the conclusion that Shane had was killed. And he said that he really must have gotten a piece of it. It had to have been at least two men, one from behind and one from the front, but he made us feel really good when he said he really must have hurt somebody because his hands were so bruised and then the two headbutts. And so if it gives us any peace at all, which Christ probably wouldn't feel this way, but I do. I'm happy to try.
Yeah, that's why he's Jesus and we're not.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so we sent his report to the inquiry. We sent the pictures to the inquiry. We sent all the computer forensic, which came up with so much more than what I could tell you. The whole relationship between the IME that they completely denied. They denied that they even had a relationship between IME and Huawei. They denied everything. So it all went to the inquiry. And sadly, when we got there, we realized we had asked for Tracy Gowen's testimony. She could have right there said the police lied. Our government withheld her testimony and told us that they claimed diplomatic immunity, and they sent her to Mexico.
And she worked for the State Department, just for people who...
She was the vice counsel, yeah.
Right.
She was the one that was with us when we heard the description. So she was representing, and a wonderful person, by the way. She was lovely to us. And probably she was unwilling to lie under oath. which other people were willing to do. So they probably had to take her out. To this day, I feel horrible for her, the position she was put in. We have begged her to come forward and tell the truth, and she doesn't communicate back to us. But at the time when we got to Singapore and asked where she was, they said that she was not going to be there, that she claimed diplomatic immunity. If it was a balanced and just fact-finding mission, wouldn't our State Department want everyone to testify?
Exactly.
Where she
well, besides clear? That, the State Department said publicly that they encouraged Tracy to testify and that they didn't claim diplomatic immunity.
So, which was a lie that I had all the emails to prove it was a lie.
Right. So they claimed diplomatic immunity, but when you said, hey, wait, why are you claiming diplomatic immunity? We're not claiming diplomatic immunity.
The beauty of modern technology is most of my book is backed up through the email communications of what I did. I was constantly communicating, and so it was really wonderful to have that. But when we got to the inquiry, my son Chet and his wife Corinne were with us, my son John, my son Dylan, our son, Rick and I, and my brother Richard, and Rick's sister Mary, and then Ashraf Masood, the computer forensic expert. We were all together. We had planned almost a full month in Singapore, because when we started, they told us it was going to be a two-day inquiry. Once the inquiry started, it went on so long, and we finally realized that we couldn't even testify until after our flight was to go home. Day after day, watching the inquiry cover up and lie about what happened to Shane, and even as we gave the evidence, we realized our pro bono lawyers were completely inept, and now we believe work for Singapore. We went up against 10 top lawyers, 5 from IME, 5 from Singapore, and it was just a sham. And after about 2 weeks, we just stood up, bowed to the judge, and walked out.
So this isn't something, it's not a process like we have here. It wasn't any kind of a trial or any of that. It was just your family brought evidence, and then the Singapore government brought evidence.
Mm-hmm. But your evidence wasn't, some of your evidence was not allowed, and I mean, you guys were running up against a wall the whole way. Even your forensic expert, they said they would pay to have him come there and testify, and it wasn't just a few days before you guys were ready to go. You had to buy his ticket and send him over because they never did pay for anything.
It was just a process that
We can't even imagine, and it's okay. Sorry, she's giving us the high sign. Darn it, we got to take another break.
Okay, go ahead.
Capitalism is wonderful, but it just keeps interrupting our story. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. You had your eyes open for a long time at this point, I'm sure, Mary.
Oh, yeah. So at the inquiry with the 10 top lawyers, one of which had a higher ranking than the judge himself, the IME claimed that there was minimal connection between IME and Huawei. We proved them false, so they did admit, well, there was some relationship.
And those two companies can't do business the way...
Not with this technology.
It
was an illegal... Yeah.
Okay.
It was an illegal relationship. And with Singapore, Shane could... And I really do believe Shane was set up from the very beginning. He was an American, and American is the only one that could get this technology. Shane was smart enough to understand the technology, to learn it, and he was American, so it was legal for him to work on it in Singapore. He thought he was working on a simple switch for a cell phone, once he realized that what he was being asked to do would be treason.
Because they were asking him to write down what they called a recipe. They were asking him to
write
it down because it couldn't be transmitted electronically because it was against the law.
Right. That's correct. So when he was in training, he wrote it down. And we had the emails proving that, where Patrick Lowe, his boss, told him to handwrite the recipes. They would not allow that in the court. The other thing that they would not allow was that there was a recording done by one of Shane's colleagues where Patrick Lowe told the employees, this was a secret recording that Shane's colleague took. Patrick Lowe, Shane's boss, told his employees that there would be legal actions if they testified under oath anything about Shane or Huawei. And we tried to submit that to the court, and they would not allow that as well. So it was just one thing after another of not allowing us to submit really important evidence. And their evidence... They had a bag of rocks, a lady testified for 3 hours about the fiber in the rope that Shane supposedly hung himself with, and that they used a bag of rocks to simulate my son's body and how he could have jumped off of a chair. His girlfriend testified that his feet were flat on the floor when she found him. None of it made sense, but they just went on these bunny trails and took hours and hours and day after day to prove that it was suicide with things that really made no sense.
Because his girlfriend found him initially, so she knew exactly what that scene looked like, despite the... I thought it was also very interesting that you guys figured out that the picture of Shane stretched out on the floor... With it, just the position he was in, they literally did a lousy Photoshop of turning that into kind of almost like a bootleg picture of him
hanging the door.
And it was the exact same picture of him laying on the floor.
Yeah, you can see it. So originally, as I told you, Detective Call said that he took no pictures, but they had to have a picture of him hanging for the court. So they took the picture of him laying on the floor and put it upright, and you can see his knee is bent exactly the way it is. His shirt's going up, so gravity should be going down, right?
Yeah.
His shirt was up.
Even those of us PhD in science know that gravity will make your shirt hang down.
Yeah. Right, right. And so they did submit that in court.
Well, then also, too, you said in the picture that there was a birthmark or a mole that was photoshopped over.
That was missing.
And the skin tone was wrong.
So all what Dr. Adelstein told us that he was garroted with a wire, and Shirley said he was found with a wire around his neck. The Singapore police claimed that he had a towel around his neck and there was a strap. So the pictures show fingernail marks going down under the wire, so he tried to get his fingers under the wire to stop from being garroted, which means, strangled. Choked with a wire. And so they showed pictures of a baby's butt. His neck looked like a baby's butt rather than the real pictures. And if you go to our website, we have both pictures you can see. They claimed that the bruises all over his hand was lividity, which lividity is blood pooling. My husband was in the mortuary business for years, so he knows the difference. When you get embalmed, blood pooling goes away, bruises don't. And so the guy they had testifying, the pathologist there, said, oh, it's blood pooling. They made an excuse for everything, and never said anything about his wounds or anything like that. But the one thing that was interesting that they themselves submitted is there was DNA, Malaysian and Chinese DNA on the towel, none of Shane's DNA, on the rope at the strap or the towel.
So supposedly it was around his neck, but it just magically didn't have any of his DNA on it?
Well, he had it underneath. They did put it around his neck to take pictures later when he was lying there on the ground. It was the strap around it had none of Shane's DNA, and the knot had no one's DNA. So somebody, whoever did the knot, had gloves on, and the knot wasn't a slip knot. So you can't hang yourself without a slip knot. They submitted that. And no one looked into the Chinese and Malaysian DNA. All over the strap where Shane had no DNA.
And what happened to the strap and the towel?
Well, we paid thousands of dollars to get the towel and the strap. And we went to two separate courts in Singapore, and they decided that it was too hurtful for us to get it. It would be too harmful for our psyche, and so they incinerated the strap and the towel.
It was just for kindness.
Yeah.
They were being kind to our family.
A little bit of convenience, but mostly kindness.
Thank you so much for that.
Right. Wow.
Stop helping us.
Yes. So the other thing they lied, IME lied about the Vico machine, saying it was like an oven, that it was an ordinary machine available all throughout Asia. We had evidence showing the contrary.
And a Vico machine is
a machine that grows the organic material on silicon. It was a very specialized
gallium
machine.
Nitride. Is,
right.
Yep. Yeah. Which you had talked about earlier, Bill. Yep. So the MOCVD machine and the formula, they said that it was just a normal machine that's all through Asia. Well, we gave evidence that we had from Shane's computer showing that it was not normal and that it was a one-of-a-kind machine, and that it also showed that it was capable of military application. And so the documents found on Shane's hard drive demonstrated all of this, and it was 150 watts compared to 60 watts. So that's military grade,
right.
60 watts.
Yeah, and they classified it as multiple use, which in code means military.
right. Crossover into military.
Right.
And at what point did Senator Max Baucus, at what point did he go to work for the, as an ambassador and disappear from your world? Was it after the inquiry or before?
My brain is foggy right now. I believe it was after the inquiry. He wanted to go to the inquiry with us, and so we came back to the United States and with all the evidence that we had submitted, with everything that had happened, and it was after that point, shortly after, that we got the phone call from Laura Rausch, his legislative assistant, and so it was after the inquiry. I can't give you the exact date.
I was just putting timeline together for people because, honestly, the story, when you start looking at all the players involved, is just so compelling. There's just no way. I mean, one of these things could happen, but not all of them.
Yeah.
And, the one piece of the puzzle that we haven't brought in is our fearless FBI under Bob Mueller.
Yeah.
They never lifted a finger and never, ever got back to you at all.
Well, they sent babysitters to us constantly because at the time our house, my computer was being hacked, our house had been broken into. They kept sending FBI babysitters to our house, and finally I said, unless you guys are going to do something, we don't need babysitters, we want action. And so they did a lot of things to make you feel like they were doing something, but nothing ever happened. And it started to dawn on us that nothing would happen. And I have letter after letter from Mueller, and the FOIA request was denied. CBS, who followed us, with 48 hours, they asked for a FOIA and told me it was the first time they've ever been denied. We finally got a document that was about 9 pages with several pages blank and just denied across it. We still have not received the full FOIA request.
And just so everybody's clear, some of the players that were involved here were Senator Baucus, Secretary of State John Kerry, Attorney General Eric Holder and Arizona Senator John McCain. And nothing got done.
Right.
So
and
who's
at the time,
whose
Max
pocket?
Baucus was the third most powerful senator in the United States, and nothing got done.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Biden was involved as well. So after the inquiry, there was a man named Michael Dee. There's a whole chapter about the – he wrote a 20-page document showing the fallacies of the inquiry.
That was fascinating.
And, yes. And he actually got that 20-page document into the hands of Joe Biden, and nothing was ever done.
That's the part that blows me away, because that was a very well-written synopsis of what happened.
I forget now how long it was, but it went on and on.
Yeah,
I mean,
but it covered everything, and it was easy to understand. And how could somebody in power read that and then just say, oh, well, you know, because that's they did nothing.
Yeah, so our State Department, within a very short amount of time, declared, in fact, that very day that it was that the coroner, Fate was his name, concluded that the evidence proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that Shane committed suicide, our State Department said that they felt that the whole inquiry was comprehensive, fair, and transparent. And Michael Dee, who was an ambassador to Singapore when he was an honorary consul general for Singapore when he was living in Texas, he had lived in Singapore, he loved Singapore. He just knew something was really wrong, and so he really studied the case, looked into it, and then wrote this 20-page document just showing all the anomalies, all the fallacies. He's still fighting for us to this day, and nothing has been done.
Well, he was his part in this was amazing. That was Chapter 15.
Yeah.
With him, and he, the one part here, he said, as there are no transcripts, I've solely worked off the coroner's findings and public quotes. So he wasn't involved on an emotional level. He was involved basically going through all the facts presented and arriving at a totally different conclusion than the inquiry did. We've got to take a really quick break.
Right.
We're going to be back with our guest, Mary Todd. We're discussing the book about the murder of her son. The book is called Hard Drive, A Family's Fight Against Three Countries, and you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
And even though I don't know what's your plan is, I know you make beauty from these ashes. I've seen joy.
I can't do everything, well, I can try. And as I roll along, I begin to find things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I find with everyone.
Okay, Mary. Now where?
Michael Dee.
Yes.
So Michael Dee is a man. He actually at times drove me crazy because he was so non-emotional and he wanted facts. And I thank God for him because I could write this book. He asked me so many questions that I had to prove, including the testimony of Tracy Goins, including everything I put in there. I had to prove to Michael Dee first. So I was ready. And God used him in an amazing way to just, he was a total stranger. He contacted us and said, what's happening is wrong. And the other thing I wanted to tell you is when we were in Singapore, so many Singaporean people showed support for us secretly. thumbs up. You're doing the right thing. Please keep going. We've gotten email after email after email. I apologize for what our government has done to you. Please don't stop. Please stick up for the people. They are oppressed people. They are under the rule of a government that is dictatorial, and it's serious. And my son is in heaven. He is doing well. We will see him again. But the fact remains that our government has done nothing, and our country needs to be protected from this insidious evil.
No, and we don't hear that. All we hear is we have a trade deficit. You know, no, the Chinese. Mm-hmm. It is. It's a very dictatorial, evil mm-hmm. government. I mean, the things that they do over there. We've done several shows on China and what happens over there, and it's not a nice place.
But it's all under the thing that makes it so creepy is that it's all mm-hmm. very much under the surface. And I had shared with you on email, and I've said this before, I've got nephews who've gone over to coach basketball, for instance.
Got one over there right now.
Things like that, and they're treated mm-hmm. really well, and they think it's all great. But the yep. part they I don't think they realize, or that we don't realize as Americans, is that they are watching you every single minute. The people you meet, none of them
yep.
are accidental acquaintances. None of what they say is necessarily what they want to tell you. And it's all very, mm-hmm. very tightly controlled.
And they magically speak English when you meet them. Yep. Yeah, that's not an accident. Yep.
That's true, too. So, yep. so here... what you really need are people from the company, IME, that he worked for to come forward and say, hey, and a lot of them did, who said, Shane wasn't depressed.
Yep.
Shane was great. We, like, had dinner. We were having a great time. And suddenly yep. he commits suicide, and they did come forward and tell you. But
yep.
I'm sure that that's a life-threatening admission at some point. Anybody who would come forward, and they didn't kick the door in at his apartment. This was not a break-in. It was obviously somebody that he knew opened the door, and
yeah.
they burst in on him. So, and those people didn't come forward.
He lived in a district. This is another funny thing. He got this amazing apartment. He can't figure out how he got it. Nobody mm-hmm. could, at this amazing price, and it happened to be in a historic district without cameras. Every place else in Singapore has cameras. His flatmate and him shared the same computer. You know, they had the same hard drive, or whatever you call it, the same...
mind
just went blank.
Yeah, yeah, network. They were
router.
Using the same...
Router.
Yeah, the same yeah. access to the internet.
Router.
Thank you.
So Shane's flat was right down the hall from his on the same floor. And when Shirley came, she came because she hadn't heard from Shane since Friday. She found him Sunday night. She came, his door was open. It wasn't locked. It wasn't banged in. The young man that had the same flat as Shane did have a key to his door. There were a lot of suspicions towards him. He right after Shane died, he was gone.
Oh.
There's so many things. Yeah, there's.
Well, he had contradictory testimony too, didn't he?
No, he didn't. He didn't have contradictory testimony. He wouldn't go in. Shirley screaming, and he wouldn't go in.
That was
Shane,
it.
That was the deal.
Yeah, he just ran for help. He didn't see him.
Well, he said he knew something was really bad. He thought it would hurt his psyche. Well.
Very delicate.
You know, if there's a woman screaming, you would come in. Yeah, I would come in. I
yeah.
would come in.
Now, was he a Chinese citizen or is he American?
No. I think he was Canadian. And there was some murky stuff there that I didn't put in the book because if I couldn't prove anything,
right.
I did. My niece wouldn't let me.
Right.
I wrote a lot more than was put in.
Well, I got to tell you.
Why we were such a great partnership.
Yeah, when I read the book, I was a
They're
little
like,
bit surprised there wasn't
yeah.
more in there about him, because it was
yeah.
very vague about his role and him
yeah.
not going
yeah.
in and then
so it was as murky as it looked to us
yeah,
to the
was,
outside.
It was pretty yeah. There was some murky stuff there, and so I just after the inquiry we came home and I. was so deflated. I just thought, this is just insane. And that's when I decided I'm going to write this book I'm going to tell the truth, and once I do, I'm going to move on, and I'm going to live my life, and if God opens a door, I will walk through it. If he doesn't, I will just live a good life and enjoy my husband and my children and my grandchildren. And that's pretty much what I've done. And God is, right now, he's opening a lot of doors because of Huawei and being in the news every day. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know what's going to happen. What I do know and what I really want people to know in this story, that my two favorite parts of our whole story is 4 months before Shane's death, we had this amazing phone conversation, and I'll say that we raised our kids in a Christian home. We homeschooled them for many years. And, you know, as a mom that loves Christ, my goal was that my kids would grow to love Christ. And when Shane was in college, he had a faith crisis and kind of walked away from his faith. But 4 months before his death, we're on the phone, and he said, "Mom, I'm going back to church, and, I'm really enjoying church." And then he said, I really want to apologize to you. It's been 11 years, and Mom, you know, I've walked away." And he said, I want to apologize. And he said, can we pray together?" And I was so shocked. I was like, "What?
Wow."
Anyway, I said, "Do you want me to pray? Or are you going to pray, Shane?" And he said, "No, I want to pray." And he just prayed the most beautiful prayer of repentance and returning to Jesus that I was just in tears. And he said at the end, he goes, "Mom, if God gets me through this alive, I want to spend the rest of my life serving him." And I thought that's what was going to happen. I really did. And then the other part of this story that I just want to be so grateful to God for is, that September after Shane's death at that pastor's retreat in Tahoe, I didn't sleep for the first 3 years after Shane's death, even on sleeping pills. I might get an hour here or an hour there, but it was just a horrendous time. But at that pastor's retreat, I did fall asleep for a little bit, and part of my problem in falling asleep is I'd always think, did he call my name out? Was he yelling, you know, "Mom, help," or what? Here, what happened? You know, how badly was he hurt? What was going through his mind? All these things. And so that one night, I had a vision of Shane in the middle of the night. And it wasn't a vision. It wasn't a dream. It was a vision. It was more real than what I see outside, the snow outside my Montana window right now. And it was of me in my kitchen cooking in California, cooking as usual, four boys. And Shane came walking through the door from the outside, and I looked at him, and I knew that he was dead, but he looked glorified, and he looked beautiful, and his face was glowing. He had a white t-shirt on, he had shorts, and he had rainbow sandals, and I just looked at him, and I said, "Shane, is that you?" And he goes, "Mom, it's me." And I said, "Shane, is it really you?" And he goes, "Mom, it's really me." And I ran into his arms, and I felt his huge rugby arms around my, just wrapped around me, and I just started to kiss the circumference of his face, and I could smell his breath, and I could feel his beard, and I just held him and kissed him. And then all of a sudden, someone walked in from the side, and Shane was gone. And I woke up that morning, and not once since then have I worried about how he died. God healed my heart that night to worry. I saw his glorified body, and I knew where he was, and I knew I would see him again, and I'm so grateful for that.
That is awesome. I mean, even in the midst of massive tragedy and loss, there's some confirmation in there.
Put your mind to rest.
Exactly. We're going to take our last quick break. We're going to come back with our guest, Mary Todd. This is the story of her son, Dr. Shane Truman Todd. You can find all the information at wethepeopleradio.us.
If I could read your mind, love, what a tale your thoughts could tell. Just like a paperback novel, the kind the drugstore sells. When you reach the part where the heartaches come, the hero would be me. Hero of the faith. You won't read that book.
book again, because the ending just too hard to take.
There you go, Mary. That could be your theme song.
That is so good.
I looked at that last night and I thought, I know where we're going to play this. Hey, we had somebody who called during the last segment who wanted to know what you think about the Otto Warmbier story.
I don't know it.
The kid who was killed in North Korea.
North Korea, yeah.
I think he's
the one that came back.
Yes.
That was in such horrible shape. He's still alive and then died on the way back.
Yep.
Here.
Correct.
Yep. No answers.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know that much about that. I do know that there's 5 different families who have contacted me whose children have died under suspicious circumstances, similar, that do not have a hard drive, hoping I could help them.
Oh, wow.
One whose son was teaching English in China, and he did not like the way that the government was working the people, and he started to rebel.
Oops.
And all of a sudden, they told his mother, Maxine, that he was hit by a car. When she got his body, it was bludgeoned. His whole head had been bludgeoned to death. Nothing has ever, happened. Another engineer in China called his mom in the morning, 56-year-old engineer working on a water project, dead that night. No explanation. So I guess how I feel about it is that is why I'm so passionate about telling our story. It reveals our government's involvement in the cover-up from the highest level, and if we don't stop now, how far is it going to go? How
exactly.
many more lives are going to be taken?
Well, and you had said in the book that Singapore is... I forget how it was worded, but
a conduit.
That no murder ever happens in Singapore. No one
ever gets murdered.
Not that no one ever dies, but that no one ever gets murdered.
100%. There's no murder in Singapore. So when asked under oath, the pathologist, they said, "How many suicides have you looked at in Singapore?" And he said, "Over 200." And they said, "Well, how many have been suicides? How many have been? Has any been? Anything other than suicide? None. Zero.
Yeah, 100%.
There's no murder in Singapore. Yeah, 100%.
Well, one of the things that we didn't really gloss it over, but we didn't talk a lot about it, was the hard drive. The hard drive was really the source and. Of a lot of your information, and the Singapore police were adamant about getting that hard drive back. They didn't want you to have that because they knew.
Mm-hmm.
They knew that there was damaging information on there. And in fact, even our FBI encouraged you to return that hard drive.
Yeah.
Well, and sadly, at the end, we did return the hard. We gave them the hard drive. We took copies of it.
Mm-hmm.
We said no. And then finally the FBI promised us that they would be involved. And we did send them the hard drive. But why would they want the hard drive? It was just a copy of Shane's computers. What they wanted was the serial number off the hard drive for the inquiry.
But then after that, you had made multiple copies, but then your home was broken into, and guess what was stolen?
No, the hard drive, I put that in the book. I'm not sure that exactly happened. Our house was broken into. This is what happened, and we couldn't find the hard drive. I wrote the book. I find the hard drive in a different place after the book was written.
No kidding.
I don't know if it was removed. Yeah, and replaced. So I hate the fact that I wrote that in the book because I actually found it, but it wasn't in the place I had left it.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is our house was broken into. The fact of the matter is that the hard drive was missing, but then all of a sudden it showed up in a place I'd never put it. So I don't really know what
happened.
That's
pretty creepy, though.
It's funny, as I was reading the book, I'm like, oh, wow, I hope they kept that hard drive someplace else. And then at the end, the house was broken into. I'm like, oh, I was waiting for that.
Yeah. So we have it in a security box now, but they definitely, you know, the FBI did have hold of our hard drive. They said they did not give it to the Singapore police, but it, we have all the evidence off the hard drive.
But then you had some suspicious things happening with your computer, with your
email and all that stuff.
I mean, somebody was watching.
Are they still doing it?
I've had a little bit of trouble. I had an app show up on my phone that I couldn't get rid of, and when we looked it up, it showed that it was an app to look at emails and text messages. That's just in the last few weeks
convenient.
I've been on radio. Yeah. But at that time, I was daily getting harassed. I would come home and all our doors would be open, which sounds funny, but it's just all open. And our door locks are coded, and so, the FBI did substantiate my computer was hacked because with every email I sent out, there was a picture of Shane's pathology report from Singapore attached. I didn't know it. I found out inadvertently, called the FBI. They came over and said that a whole different location was controlling my computer. Our alarm system was hacked one night. I'm eating dinner. Rick's on a trip flying, you know, with American, and all of a sudden our alarm goes off, and I couldn't turn it off. When the alarm guys got there, he said, that's impossible. And he found out that it was being controlled from a different place. So it was just harassment. And what I want to say is they can't scare me. They've taken my firstborn son.
Right.
I'm not going to be scared away. I don't think they're going to murder me. And if they do, you guys will know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's always best to hide right out in the open.
That's what I'm doing.
And people really need to, I mean, there's always that school of thought that says, well, you know, this isn't going to change anything. But you know what? It will change something because on two levels. I don't think that if we're aware that our government is not defending American citizens, I mean, I think that's really important. Mm-hmm. Everybody in our government is representing somebody. So if the constituent base won't stand for it, that's where change comes in. I mean, people get mad at the representatives, but the electorate put them there. And then on the flip side, China is doing a really big push to send students here to college, which is fine, but then they're befriending college students here, and, oh, China's great, and giving them the whole sales pitch, getting them to go there.
You can make a lot of money in China.
Yeah,
come over and
they're
work.
Just so nice to them, and you just wonder, are they grooming them? Are they just making them non-adversarial? I mean, it could be that easy. You know, they won't believe shows like this.
I know for a fact they've infiltrated our universities. The same players that were involved with Shane are teaching in our universities. I have a dear friend who was getting a PhD who said that he was being asked to compromise U.S. security.
There you go.
To go to a whole different PhD program. I've sent this to all of our elected officials. I've sent the proof. It's happening in Columbia University, UCLA. I have the proof. And that is why I'm so passionate about highlighting the potential threat to U.S. security and to the misuse of our technology and what China is doing. They have a 100-year plan to overtake the world. There's books written about it. And I really do believe that for such a time as this, God has given my husband and our family the task of telling our story to warn people.
Well, I truly believe the technology that he was working on over there should have never been sent over there.
He was right to be worried.
He was right to be worried.
Yeah.
He knew the implications of that technology, and I think that's why our government wants to kind of tamp it down. And
the bad part is that for his patriotism, he was basically executed.
Yeah, and if you look at the administration during that time, what were they doing? Mm-hmm. I mean, they were bowing down to foreign leaders and wanting everybody to be equal, and this
selling
was
the U.S. out
that's
at
right.
every single turn.
And, yeah, they were complicit, and I'm hoping that that's not the case today. But
But you didn't get rid of everybody.
No.
And then the bad part is, you know, I understand that, you know, somebody in the capacity of their job, you know, they're told, okay, you can't go testify like the gal from the State Department. But, you know, at what point do you have to have some integrity? You know what? I'm going to go be something different now. I'm going to go find a different career because I'm going to step up on this. It's going to take Americans to step up.
Yeah, and it will happen. I truly believe. I mean, my father was in law enforcement his entire life, and he told me one time that something like 90% of crimes are solved through somebody talking. And in this case, it may not happen today or tomorrow or next year, but at some point, you're going to have the answers. You're going to know who was involved in this because somebody's going to talk.
Yep.
And
you very much.
Well, I'm hoping for.
Yeah, you need a hero.
And I'm hoping with this new administration for a congressional investigation. That's what we wanted from the beginning. And I really believe that if our administration rises up and gets involved, that can take place and it would shed light on a lot of what's going on.
Yeah.
And I just say there's a book called The 100-Year Marathon, Chinese Secret Strategy to Replace America as the Global Superpower by Michael Pillsbury. Very interesting book. And their world superpower they want by 2048. They're very patient people.
Oh, yes. They've always had the long game.
All right, Mary, can you believe it? We have run out of time.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, you two.
Well,
thank
you
so
much
for this opportunity.
Well, thank you for coming on and telling your story. I know it probably wasn't easy.
You can find all of this at wethepeopleradio.us. Bye, Mary. We'll see you next week. Here's the song about your hero.
Bye-bye.